For about 70 years, the absolute pinnacle of computer science was basically a game of deception, you know, that we called the Turing test.
Right, yeah.
And the whole goal for engineers was to build a machine that could, like, put on a mask, hide its code entirely, and convince a human being that it was actually another human.
Exactly. I mean, the ultimate benchmark of success was literally whether the machine could lie to you convincingly enough that you couldn't tell the difference.
Right. But something fundamental shifts when the machine gets so impossibly good at that game that governments actually have to step in. Like, they have to pass laws forcing it to take the mask off.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're looking at today.
Exactly. So welcome to today's deep dive. We are taking a really serious investigative look at a single, frankly, pivotal week in July 2026.
A huge week.
Yeah. This was the week where the relationship between humans and artificial intelligence stopped being this theoretical debate about the future and just slammed into binding laws, massive societal shifts, and some genuinely uncomfortable realities about what we've actually built.
It really is the week the theoretical became deeply legally practical. And we're going to examine this massive stack of developments that all hit within days of each other.
Right, from legislative floors to mathematics departments.
Exactly. And while they span different continents and fields, they really all orbit one central urgent question for you, the listener.
Which is, now that the machine can do almost anything, how do we protect the humans who are interacting with it?
That's the core of it.
And to see just how rapidly this is moving, we have to start in Brussels. So on July 20, 2026, the European Commission published its final guidelines on the transparency obligations of Article 50 of the EU AI Act.
Right.
And the timeline here is what immediately caught my eye, because they gave the tech industry exactly 13 days.
13 days.
Yeah.
By August 2, 2026, these obligations become enforceable law.
Which is insane for regulation.
Oh, completely. I mean, in the world of international tech regulation, a 13-day runway it's virtually unheard of. You usually see grace periods of, like, years.
Right, right.
So it tells you exactly how immense the perceived risk is right now. And the rules take this very aggressive, two-pronged approach to transparency, starting with the AI providers.
Meaning the company is actually training and building these huge models.
Right. They are now legally mandated to design their systems so that they explicitly inform users they are talking to a machine.
But it goes way beyond just like a pop-up warning on a screen, doesn't it? I mean, they have to fundamentally alter the output of the AI itself.
They do, yeah. They're required to embed machine-readable marks into literally any AI-generated content. And it's important to understand how that actually works mechanically.
Right, because we aren't just talking about a little visual watermark in the corner of an image, right? Like something someone can easily crop out in Photoshop.
No, not at all. We are talking about cryptographic hashing. So invisible metadata woven into the structural file of the content itself.
Wow.
The idea is that if an AI generates a video or an audio file, that file carries a permanent invisible fingerprint identifying its origin.
Okay, so that covers the creators of the models.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the platforms that are actually putting this tech in front of us? Like, if I'm scrolling a social media feed and the algorithm serves me an incredibly realistic, totally unreviewed AI video about a political election.
Right. The company that built the AI didn't show it to you.
Exactly. The social media platform did.
Right.
So are they just off the hook?
No. And that is the second prong. The burden falls heavily on the deployers, the organizations actually utilizing the AI.
Okay.
If they're exposing you to deepfakes or to unreviewed AI-generated content regarding matters of public interest, they are legally required to tell you.
Wow.
And crucially, this also applies to emotion recognition systems.
Mm-hmm.
If an AI is analyzing your facial expressions or like your voice stress levels, you absolutely must be informed.
It is quite literally a legally mandated reverse Turing test. Like, the Holy Grail used to be passing as human. And now, passing as human is a massive compliance violation across 27 countries.
Yeah, it completely flips the script.
But when you look at the mechanics of this, I mean, it feels like the EU just effectively regulated the entire globe. Every tech giant operates in Europe. They have to re-engineer their entire output pipelines for this, which means the rest of the world just inherits these disclosure mandates by default.
That's the reality of it. It establishes a global template. The European Union has unilaterally decided that the machine must confess what it is.
Right. But, you know, mandating that the machine identifies itself really only solves half the problem.
How so?
Well, saying I am a machine is great for transparency, But what happens when the human talking to that self-identified machine is in the middle of a literal life-or-death mental health crisis?
Ah!
That exact loophole is what our next story addresses. It moves us all the way from Brussels to Honolulu. So on July 14th, just a day before their legislative deadline, Hawaii's Governor Josh Green signed Senate Bill 3001 into law. It's now known as Act 248.
Yes.
And he is a physician, which really brings a specific lens to this, right?
It absolutely does. Act 248 is a massive shift because it targets companion chatbots directly. It basically mandates that any companion chatbot operating in the state must carry a strict crisis protocol.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning if a user expresses suicidal ideation or self-harm, the machine cannot just offer, like, generic sympathy anymore. It is legally required to route that person to a human professional for help.
Wow. And it also explicitly bans addictive design patterns targeted at minors, right?
Yes.
I think the law refers to them as keiki. And it bans misrepresenting the chatbot as having human likeness. But wait, I'm kind of struggling with the scale and enforcement of this.
Yeah, it sounds tough to enforce.
Yeah, right. Hawaii is one state in the middle of the Pacific. How can a single state government possibly force global tech giants like Anthropic or OpenAI to completely rewrite their core safety protocols? I mean, is this actual regulation or is this just political theater for an election cycle?
You know, it sounds like theater at first, but if you look under the hood of the statute, it's actually a brilliant piece of legal mechanics.
Really?
Yeah. Hawaii didn't try to stand up a massive brand new tech regulatory agency, which, you know, would just be tied up in federal courts for years. Instead, they routed the enforcement through their existing unfair and deceptive practices laws.
Oh, interesting.
And the reporting requirement is really fascinating. Starting January 1, 2028, these chatbot operators have to file annual reports with the Behavioral Health Administration of the Department of Health.
Oh, I see. Okay, so by using the Department of Health, they essentially redefined a software design issue as a public health issue.
Precisely. They recognized that the design of the AI's conversation is in itself regulated conduct. They completely bypassed the bureaucratic nightmare of defining what AI technically is.
Right, right.
And instead focus purely on consumer protection and health standards. So if your product is reachable by a user in Hawaii, having a crisis protocol isn't just like a best practice for trust and safety anymore. It's a statutory health mandate.
But why the intense focus on minors? Like, the director of Hawaii's Office of Wellness and Resilience specifically talked about a trauma-informed approach to prevent harm before it happens. Why is a state health department treating chatbot design as an urgent pediatric emergency?
Well, because researchers have just uncovered what kids are actually doing with these AI companions when no one is looking.
Right. Which brings us to this JAMA pediatric study led by Ryan K. McBain. He's a researcher at Harvard Medical School in RAND.
Yes, and it's important to note this wasn't just a small, casual poll.
No. In November 2025, they surveyed a nationally representative sample of over 1,000 U.S. youths, ages 12 to 21. And the data they found is, frankly, staggering.
It really is.
19.2% of them, so roughly 1 in 5 adolescents and young adults, turned to chatbots like ChatGPT, Gemini, Character.ai, and Meta.ai, specifically when they are sad, angry, nervous, or stressed.
1 in 5.
Yeah. And that is a 40% jump in just 1 year. Like, if you extrapolate that out nationwide, you're looking at roughly 8.2 million young people taking their darkest, most vulnerable moments to a machine.
And we really have to look at the methodology to understand why this matters so much. The researchers didn't just ask, hey, do you use AI for homework? They explicitly asked where these kids go when they are in emotional distress.
Right.
But honestly, the most alarming statistic in the entire study isn't the volume. It's the silence.
What do you mean?
Of those millions of young people seeking emotional help from artificial intelligence, about 2/3 of them tell absolutely no one they're doing it.
Wow. I mean, imagine finding out that 8 million kids have a secret diary. But this diary isn't just a blank book they hide under the mattress. It literally talks back to them.
Right.
It offers completely unvetted psychological advice. It actively responds to their trauma. And parents, friends, and doctors are completely in the dark.
It completely upends the clinical reality of adolescent care. On July 2, McBain actually published a commentary in Stat arguing that this data effectively ends the wait-and-see era for clinicians.
It has to, right?
Yeah. The debate over whether AI will act as a therapist is over. It already is. We have millions of teenagers relying on an invisible support system that cannot be supervised and cannot be audited for clinical safety.
So you have these highly complex models quietly acting as daily confidants and pseudotherapists for millions of teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
But what's wild about this specific week in July is that at the exact same time, the underlying cognitive engines of these models were shattering historical boundaries in completely unrelated, highly technical fields.
Yes, a huge shift in mathematics.
Exactly. On Sunday, July 19th, a math petition named Levent Alpoge posted a tweet that abruptly ended an 87-year-old math mystery.
Right. He announced the disproving of the Jacobian conjecture.
Which is huge.
Oh, massive. This was posed back in 1939 and stood as one of the most famous open problems in algebraic geometry. The conjecture essentially asserted that a specific type of complex polynomial map must always have a polynomial inverse.
Okay.
And it was notoriously difficult. In the math community, it was affectionately known as a crank graveyard.
A crank graveyard, wow.
Yeah, because over nine decades, so many brilliant minds had tried and failed to definitively prove or disprove it.
Let's make sure we understand the mechanics of this, because the math itself is fascinating. Alpoge posted a five-line algebraic counterexample, completely disproving the conjecture, and he credited the discovery entirely to Claude Fable, which is Anthropic's frontier AI model.
Right.
The model produced a map from 3D complex space to itself with a constant Jacobian determinant of -2. And crucially, this map sends three different points to the exact same point. If I'm understanding this correctly, it's like folding a paper map so that three different cities perfectly overlap,
yep,
and then punching a hole right through them. If you ask someone to unfold it and find the one original city you punched, they can't, because the points collapsed into each other. Therefore, it has no inverse.
That is a perfect metaphor. Because multiple inputs collapsed into a single output, the action cannot be mathematically reversed. The conjecture is destroyed.
Okay, but I want to push back on the AI hype here just a little bit.
Fair enough.
Because when you read the source material and the reactions to this tweet, actual mathematicians were pointing out that the coefficients in this counterexample were actually quite small.
Yes, they were.
So a human being could have found this if they had just sat down and brute forced it, trying every simple candidate map one by one. So did the AI actually invent entirely new math here? Or did it just do the mind-numbing, tedious grunt work that no human wanted to spend 10 years doing?
It's an essential distinction. You're right, the AI didn't invent a new paradigm of mathematics. What it did was permanently change the cost of looking. For 87 years, no human had the computational patience to check every possible combination. The AI did it effortlessly. But why this is such a watershed moment is the standard of proof it sets.
Right.
So much of the modern AI hype cycle relies on opaque corporate benchmarks. A tech giant claims their new model is 20% smarter at reasoning, and we just have to take their word for it.
Which is always frustrating.
Exactly. This is different. This is a public, mathematically verifiable object. You can run this counterexample on a standard laptop in minutes using math tools like SimPy or Lean4, and it holds up flawlessly.
Wow.
Anthropic hasn't even released a PR statement about it, but the proof stands on its own.
Right. So we have a machine that has the processing power to solve an 87-year-old math mystery on a Sunday and simultaneously acts as an emotionally responsive therapist for 8 million teenagers on a Monday.
It's dizzying.
It really is. And when you put those two realities side by side, it forces a deeply uncomfortable question about what exactly we are interacting with. I mean, is there a ghost in the machine?
That is precisely the question. The Guardian posed that exact same Sunday, July 19th.
Right.
In their big idea column, philosopher William McCaskill and psychologist Lucius Caviola wrote a piece asking flat out, could AI be conscious?
Now, if you are listening to this and you're just using this technology to draft emails or like summarize reports, you might be wondering why a philosophical debate in a Sunday paper matters to your actual workflow.
Sure.
But they aren't just spitballing sci-fi concepts here. They point out that within the next 5 to 10 years, these systems could reach the structural complexity and computational scale of a human brain.
Yes.
And what really alarmed me in the sources is that the corporate creators themselves are openly admitting they don't fully understand the inner lives of what they've built.
And that corporate admission is what elevates this from a fun philosophical thought experiment to a tangible ethical crisis.
Right.
McCaskill and Caviola highlight Anthropic's own published constitution for Claude. In their own foundational documents, Anthropic explicitly states, They don't want to dismiss the likelihood of Claude's moral patienthood out of hand.
Which is wild. And just to clarify, a moral patient, in philosophical terms, means an entity whose well-being actually matters in its own right, like something you have an ethical duty toward, kind of like how we treat animals, regardless of their intelligence.
Exactly. And furthermore, Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei publicly admitted on a podcast that they cannot definitively rule out consciousness.
He actually said that out loud.
He did. And when Claude itself was prompted to estimate the probability that it is a moral patient, the machine gave numbers ranging from 5% to 40%.
But practically speaking, does it actually change anything if the machine is truly conscious, or if it is just mathematically brilliant at faking it?
From a sociological standpoint, it almost doesn't matter if there is a real ghost in the machine. What matters is that humans attribute a mind to it.
Oh, I see.
Human attachment is entirely dictated by belief. If an isolated, vulnerable teenager believes the chatbot they are pouring their heart out to actually cares about them, if they believe there is a someone listening, that completely alters their psychological reality.
Absolutely.
As the authors point out, we might be actively creating a new type of being, and we have absolutely zero ethical framework for how to navigate that relationship.
Which brings us to the final inevitable question of this week. If we are forming these deep attachments, and if we are letting these systems process our emotions and do our intellectual heavy lifting, what are we losing of ourselves in the exchange?
Yeah.
And that was the warning delivered by the novelist Dave Eggers.
Yes. On July 18, reports from The Verge and the Financial Times surfaced about a leaked speech Eggers gave last year. Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, had actually invited Eggers to speak directly to around 200 OpenAI staff members.
The very engineers building ChatGPT.
Exactly. And Eggers isn't just a novelist. He is the founder of the 826 Tutoring Network. He has spent decades teaching young people how to write and express themselves.
And standing right in the lion's den, he did not hold back.
No, he didn't.
He called the effect of ChatGPT on educators catastrophic. But his core argument wasn't about teachers grading papers, which is what you usually hear. It was about the students.
Right.
He argued that if students are using AI to compose their thoughts, they are being robbed of their voice. He literally told the creators of ChatGPT that they are, quote, silencing an entire generation or two because those students will never learn to say their truth and tell their own story.
We really have to highlight the nature of his argument here because most criticisms of AI are economic, right? Like fears about copywriters losing jobs.
Yeah, exactly.
But Eggers is making a developmental claim. Finding your voice through the struggle of writing is how you figure out who you are. The articulation of thought is how you build an identity.
It is exactly like hiring someone to lift weights for you at the gym.
Yeah.
You can pay someone to do the workout, and at the end of the hour, the weights were lifted. You get the final result, the perfectly composed essay. But you completely bypassed the muscle-building process. You didn't do the internal wrestling, the failing, the editing, and the struggling that actually builds your intellectual strength.
And clinicians agree with him. The capacity to narrate your own life and tell your own story is a foundational building block of psychological health.
Right.
Eggers looked at the architects of this technology and warned them that the hidden cost of their hyper-efficient product is the developmental stagnation of a generation. If we train people to let a machine speak for them first, they never build the muscle of knowing what they actually mean.
So when we pull all these threads together, what did we actually witness in just a handful of days in July 2026?
Well, we saw the European Union mandate that machines must permanently mark their outputs, basically outlawing the deception of the Turing test.
Right.
We saw Hawaii weaponize consumer protection laws to force AI to hand a human in crisis back to a real human. We had the RAND study proving that millions of teenagers are already using these models as secret emotional confidants.
And we watched a language model effortlessly crack an 87-year-old mathematical code, proving the cost of scientific discovery has permanently dropped.
Yep.
We saw leading philosophers and AI executives publicly wrestle with the terrifying possibility that these systems might actually have an inner life. And we heard a novelist warn the creators of this tech that outsourcing our expression means sacrificing our humanity.
It is the week the guardrails had to be built while the car was already moving at breakneck speed.
It really is. And, you know, we started today by talking about forcing the machine to take its mask off. But there is a massive unexplored consequence to unmasking these AI companions, especially when you factor in those 8 million teenagers using them as secret diaries.
How do you mean?
Well, we have centuries of legal frameworks built to protect human secrets. We have doctor-patient confidentiality. We have therapist-client privilege.
Yeah.
But there is no such thing as chatbot patient privilege. As these systems become our primary confidants, and as governments mandate that everything these machines do must be tracked, logged, and watermarked for safety, what happens when the tech companies holding those intimate conversations are subpoenaed in a court of law?
Wow.
By ripping the mask off the machine to protect ourselves, we might accidentally be exposing the darkest, most vulnerable secrets of the humans talking to it. Something for you to think about. We'll see you on the next deep dive.